Gaita Lease is our guest here on The Paula Gordon Show, Conversations with People at the Leading Edge. Among the many stories for which he is known are a number of books, and now he has pulled them all together in a different way, in A Writer's Life. Bill Russell.
In the context of telling that story, you introduced a word that I'd never seen before, and I suspect there's a reason maybe it's not seen it before. I think you created it. Ephemerons.
Oh.
Or ephemorons was the way I first saw it.
but I say that because what you were talking about is reporters who sit at their screens and put things together, but never, you know, engage in the taste, the smell, the feel, the tangibility of the stories they're writing about. What you're talking about with China, just going there and inhabiting the space, is important. But you started a story about Selma that I don't think you finished.
Oh, I'd like to start.
With Mr. Chestnut, yes.
Chestnut, but also
the other story.
The one that I think goes to, you know, the heart of what you've done and what is not commonly done and the problems, serious problems of the media, is a marriage story.
A love story.
A love story. And a photographic,
yes, thank you,
essay that was done and not and didn't make it to the newspaper. And it seems to me that that story sort of embodies a lot of what you're talking about.
Well, in this art of hanging out, that is the way I go about my work. And we've already said this, but let's stress it since you brought it up. Without the technology, it isn't. You don't Google this. You don't get this thing from email. You don't get this from taking the rather expedient and probably comfortable way of getting there, shortcutting. It is very time-consuming. It requires great patience. You have to be there physically. I believe you have to have eye contact with the people. I believe you have to spend time with the people. I don't necessarily believe you have to start interviewing the people. In fact, you don't have to interview the people. Just hang around and become part of their life to the degree that you can legitimately. And when I started going back to Selma's, I referred earlier to my ongoing curiosity, not only about Selma, because I thought it was a way of looking at America. I mean, yes, it is a southern town, yes, but not so different, as I said earlier, to the town in New Jersey where I was born and reared, and where I to this day still have a house. I have a residence both in New York and in my hometown. And I use my hometown as a way of seeing something of the America. It's a very conservative, very Republican, and very Protestant town. It was founded by ministers. And I see America as a Protestant community, country still, and this community as almost a reflection of the basic values of the Bush era, or at least middle America is there.
It's a However, lot like the 50s.
And so is the 50s has always been with us in a way. I mean, I don't know that George Bush is a man of the 50s, but I mean, I do believe that there is something almost, you can't put decades on things. You know, this is the decade or this is the period of, what's our perception of what the period is. I mean, you can find, but we're getting a little bit far now from what I think you asked, Bill. In Selma, when I was there in 1990, I went there to write a little article for the New York Times at my suggestion. I was long gone from the staff. I left in 65. But I wanted to write the 25th anniversary of Bloody Sunday. There was an enactment that was going to be staged in Selma by some of the old-timers who were still alive, John Lewis being one of them, congressman from Georgia, who was a young activist in the 1960s, as we well know. And he's the one who got his head banged in during Bloody Sunday in March of 65. And now he's 25 years older, and so am I, and so is the story. It's 1990, and I wanted to write a little bit about that. My intention was to just cover the march, this enacted march. It's like Old Timers Day in Yankee Stadium. You know, these people bowing, and the music plays, and the photographs are taken, and memories are recalled, and it's just a ceremony, a one-day event.
And backwards looking.
Backwards looking. And I went in there to Selma, got my suitcase in the hotel where I had stayed 25 years before, got a rented car, drove over to see the old mayor, a white man. Same mayor that had been in 65 was still there in 1990, Joseph Smitherman. He only died about a year or so ago. And he was a protege of George Wallace. But he was one of those old segs, the old segregation mayor, that with time changed, as the nation had changed, and the city had changed in that there were now black police officers, there were blacks running other areas of city government, and there was integration in the workplace, if not in private life, necessarily. And I thought I'd interview the mayor just as a courtesy call prior to the march, which was going to be the following day. I was seeing the mayor on a Friday night, Friday afternoon, and the march was going to be Saturday afternoon. I said, "Mr. Mayor, how are you doing?" And he started telling me how wonderful everything was, how great Selma was, how egalitarian Selma was, you know, how, oh boy, we reformed. Hooray, hooray.
Speaking politics.
Yeah, and I'm listening there and half listening and thinking, well, let me wake him up or shock him. Let me ask something really stupid. Sometimes that's the way to get to people. I said, "Mr. Mayor, in this town that you say is much, much more equal than it used to be, and no doubt about it, I can see that myself, but is there really such a thing as a black person and a white person falling in love and having a love affair in this town?" And he looked at me very quizzically. He said, "Are you talking about Randall Miller?" And I said, "No, I don't know who Randall Miller is. Who's he? He's the head of our personnel department." And I said, "What does that have to do with the story?" "Well, he's getting married tomorrow." "Getting married tomorrow to a white woman," he said. "A white woman in Selma?" "Yep, he's getting married." "Where?" "Getting married in his house." "Has this been in the newspapers?" "No, I don't think it's been in any newspapers." And I thought, well, why was it in the newspapers? This is interesting. And I said, "Well, do you think I could talk to Mr. Miller? He's in Montgomery on city business today," Montgomery being many, about 50 miles away. And I said, "Well, do you know where the wedding is going to be?" He says, "This house." He gave me the address. And I said, "Thank you, sir. Well, I'll see you at the parade tomorrow, Mr. Mayor." "Thank you, okay." And I drove right to that address, and I saw a car parked there, and I went up to the up the pathway, a few steps, knocked on the door. And a very attractive white woman, blonde, blue-eyed, very congenial, greeted me. I said, are you going to be the bride tomorrow to Randall Miller?" "That's true." She says, "My name is Betty Ramsey, and tomorrow I'll be Betty Miller." I said, "Well, I just heard from Mayor Smitherman about this, and I wonder, could I talk to you about it?" Well, certainly. Come on in. So she invited me into her living room, and I saw two white teenage girls. And these are my daughters. She'd been married before. I didn't know it then, but she'd been married to a white man, and they were in Selma. And she sat me down, asked the girls to leave the room, which they did. And this woman, Betty Ramsey, on the eve of her wedding, told me about her love affair with candor, openly. And sometimes I must say that I do not usually take notes. But when she started to tell me the details of how, though married in this town, which has a history of lynching men, black men, if they so much would look at a woman in an interesting way. And there had been a great rape case in 1953, when I was still a student at the University of Alabama, in this very town, because a black man went too far or was thought to have gone too far with a white woman. Anyway, here we are 1990, and we're going to be this wedding, interracial wedding. And two of these people were adulterers. They'd both left their wife. The black bride, groom had married to a black school teacher, and here's this Betty Ramsey, who left her husband and separated from her family and her daughters for a while, and now was going to be in marital union on the following day. And I thought it was an amazing story. What I did, I took out my little, I don't carry a notepad. I carry, and I wish we were on television, I'll show you, I carry cards. They're like shirt boards. I take white shirt board, and I cut it up. And it's like a notepad, but it has, you know, the resiliency of board. And I took out my little notepad, so-called, and started making notes. Why? Because I wanted her to know that I'm there, not as an interloper, not as a guy, you know, chatting like those women in my mother's store to have the time. I was here serious. I'm writing this story.
The New York Times.
Well, I didn't know that they were going to publish it. I was thinking, this is the story. The story is not Jesse Jackson and John Lewis marching and the, you know, the enactment tomorrow. This is really the story. You know, sometimes the story isn't what you think the story is. You discover the story, while going up, you're thinking you're going on an assignment, but it's not the assignment you later find out. And I was finding out on this very occasion and wanting in front of her to make notes. And she didn't stop me. She didn't say, what are you writing this down for? No, she just the same woman. She went on and on. She wanted to talk. She wanted to talk, just like those women in my mother's shop. Sometimes they want to talk, and they have to have someone to talk to. And here she's talking to this guy who's doing this piece on the New York Times about the march 25 years later. And I went on and on talking. And I said, when is your husband coming home, or your fiancé? She said, oh, probably about 7 o'clock. This was about 4 o'clock. I said, do you think if I call later, we might be have I could meet him, we go out to dinner? He said, well, you call. So after I'd gotten all her story, how she fell in love, how she decided to break up and all that, I went back to my Holiday Inn in Selma, and then I around 7 o'clock I called, and he was home. I said, Mr. Miller, I spoke to your wife. Yes, she told me. I wonder if we could come over and take you to dinner tonight. Well, that would be fine. How about 7:30? I went back, picked them up. Three of us went out. I got his side of the story. How he met her, how at first he was uncertain whether he should break up his marriage. He shouldn't even tell about it, but it was a covert relationship for a while. But then rumors and the point is, I said, I want to come to this wedding tomorrow. How many are there? He said, well, there'll be only 25. How many are white? About half and half. He said, white and black. We have some friends here. I said, that's interesting. In Selma, you have some white friends. Yes, we do. And there's going to be a minister. Yes, there is. Can I come with a photographer? I said, the Times is sending a photographer to cover the parade, but I think this is a better story than this parade. He said, well, I said, she's a black woman, incidentally. Her name is Michelle Agents, and she used to be in Chicago. She was the official photographer of the first black mayor of Chicago, Mr. Mayor Washington. And he said, well, that's all right. Miller, you'd bring her along. So the next day, instead of going to that parade, I brought Michelle Agents with me, A-G-I-N-S, Agents. And we saw the wedding. I made notes. I interviewed some of the people. And the photographer took pictures of the bridal couple. You know, the blonde, blue-eyed, statuesque, beautiful, now Betty Miller, and now betrothed and then married to Randall Miller. And here are photographs. And I wrote my story, and I filed it. And then the next day, I left town. I did make mention of the march, of course. I did make mention of the fact that Jesse Jackson was there, and the widow, Martin Luther King's widow, was there, and they all made their speeches. But it was rather, you know, pro forma. It was what you would expect. But I led my story with this black-white marriage and how they came to know, and romance and love affair in Selma, of all places, which had, you know, 25 years before been the center of tear gas and barking dogs and cattle prods and banging and Bloody Sunday on television, et cetera, et cetera. The story did get published. It was a front-page article. I flew from Montgomery to Atlanta, and I waited for my changeover, and while I was in Atlanta airport, I bought the New York Times, and I saw it was on the front page. But I thought there'd be a picture of the wedding that would accompany my story, but there wasn't. The picture on the front page of the Times was an old Associated Press picture taken 25 years before, showing a white state trooper with a club hitting a black woman in the tear gas of this highway just outside of Selma on its way to Montgomery. Now, that's not this picture that accompanied my story. That's an old wire service picture that they wouldn't. Anyway, they didn't use the picture. I was disappointed. And I flew back to New York. A couple weeks later, I met an editor at a public library, a New York Times editor at the New York Public Library, some social event. He says, a good story you did. I said, why didn't you guys use the picture? He said, oh, well, there's somebody who didn't like it. Who was that somebody? Oh, I'll tell you something. I said, tell me now. He said, that guy is black editor, and he works for under Hal Raines, who is the leading editor. And I said, why did they lose the picture? Well, the black editor, or the African-American, just didn't think it was appropriate. I said, well, that's terrible. Anyway, that was the end of it. About a month and a half later, I'm at some conference, some journalism conference, and I'm on the stage. I'm part of a panel. And I see this blackout. His name is Gerald Boyd. And I said, during an interview, we had a time we could talk. And I said, Mr. Gerald Boyd, are you the guy that killed that picture when I did that story about the 25th anniversary and the black-white wedding? Yep. I said, why? I thought it was boring. I said, what's boring? Well, that stuff, you know, that's nothing new. I said, nothing new. I mean, Selma's nothing new. We had a confrontation of sorts, and then the moderator kind of got between us. And that was just, it was way, news judgment, how false is news judgment, how presumably, while objective, subjectivity comes in to whether you do publish what you don't publish. And that's really journalism today.
Which is exactly where I want to come back to and return in a moment, because all of these things have such immediacy as we think about how do we know what we know in the present moment. It is our delight to be with Gay Talese. We trust that you'll be with all of us when we return in a moment.